headlines. The Ukraine issues nationwide air raid alerts hours after Kiev and Moscow blame each other for a deadly airstrike on the Ukrainian city of Kherson. Morocco witnesses rallies in support of the Palestinian cause, with demonstrators calling for the cancellation of the normalization deal with Israel. And the UN says the Taliban's ban on women working for NGOs in Afghanistan will hit humanitarian operations in the country. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Air raid sirens are sounding in the Ukrainian capital Kiev and elsewhere across the country as the war with Russia grinds into its 11th month. The Kiev city administrations urge people to go to shelters. Unconfirmed Ukrainian social media reports say the alert may have been declared after Russian jets took to the skies of Belarus. The sirens come after a strike on the southern city of Kherson killed at least 10 people and injured almost 60 others. Ukraine blamed Russia for the attack, while Moscow said it was a false flag operation by Kiev. Russia captured Kherson weeks after its invasion in February, but its forces recently withdrew from the city. It still controls much of Kherson region, and fierce battles continue. Kherson was one of the four Ukrainian regions that joined Russia following referendums in September. In France, clashes erupt between police and protesters a day after three people of a Kurdish community are killed in the capital, Paris. Police used tear gas to disperse the protesters, who hurled rocks to vent their anger. Protesters demand answers over the killings and support and protection from the government. The gun attack happened on Friday at a Kurdish cultural center and a nearby cafe. Investigations are still underway. Police have arrested a 69-year-old man. He is known to have a history of racism and attacks on foreign nationals, especially in the Kurds. We asked journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas about the way the French police respond to such deadly attacks. Here's what he had to say.
No, I think it's very clear. Even the French police have admitted at the moment that there's a case of racism, according to them. Of course, this is really contentious because we see this consistently with Western police services and counterterrorism fraternity, where they are very reluctant to name white terrorists, essentially, European indigenous white terrorists, as such. They like to fob it off as people with mental disturbance cases, or they're racist, or it's a one-off incident. The fact of the matter is that Europe and the West in general is suffering from an absolute, it's an absolute pandemic of violent right-wing organizations and actions. I mean, you only need to look across some of the internationally recognized organizations like the Atomwaffen Division. That's formed by a guy called Brandon Russell, who's responsible for multiple murders and mass casualty plots. That was across Canada and Australia. You've got others I could name. Combat 18, it's a neo-Nazi organization that's been proscribed in Canada and Germany. And, of course, Nordic Resistance Movement. List goes on and on. The most concerning one, of course, is the link to the Ukrainian Azov Brigade, which is currently being backed big time by the Americans and Putin. And this raises the question of the connection between Western deep state and these terrorists.
As European countries are struggling with a rapid rise in inflation and increasing cost of living, German inflation is forecast to remain high for the next couple of years. We've discussed this issue in our news review program.
And now welcome Welcome, everyone, to News Review Program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Inflation in Germany is likely to remain high for another 2 years as companies pass on higher input costs. Head of the Council of Economists, Monica Schnitzer, says inflation is happening due to a second effect of high energy prices and some companies significantly exaggerating their input costs. She expressed concern about high electricity prices. Officials stressed the government should decide whether to let remaining nuclear power plants run in the country or not. The top economist is demanding ordering new fuel rods and rechargeable batteries promptly. German inflation faces its fastest pace since the 1950s, with a consumer price rise of 11.3% in November. Crisis is happening while European countries are all grappling with increasing costs of living these days. Joining us now for the program is Professor David Barkin, Professor of Economics from Metropolitan Autonomous University, joining us from Mexico City, and Scott Bennett, political commentator, joining us from San Francisco, California. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. I guess, Professor Barkin, with all due respect, we're going to start with you, sir, down there in Mexico City. Hope you're safe and doing well. Your thoughts on Germany and its staggering economy suspected to have inflation for at least another 2 years?
I think that it's very important to understand that the inflation may be partly due to increasing input costs, but is also due to a staggering change in the behavior and the process of increasing, of allowing increased profits of the large monopolies that are actually controlling the prices of the inputs throughout the not only the German economy but the world economy, so that the increasing profit rates and the extraordinary extra salaries that the chief officers of these corporations are enjoying must be factored into the equation. And that it's very important to understand that this factor is being ignored or allowed implicitly by the economic and political authorities, not only in Germany, but elsewhere, but particularly in Germany and in the United States.
Thank you, sir. And Scott, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Now, Scott, it's funny, this head of the Council of Economists for Germany, Monica Schnitzer, says that the government should decide whether to let remaining nuclear plants run in the country or not, basically referring to the fact, implying that she feels a big part of this inflation is due to rising energy costs, and at the heart of that, you very well know, is the doggone Ukraine war. Your initial thoughts on this, Scott?
The German people don't know the truth because, precisely as you've said, the media and the politicians have conspired to hide the truth from the German people, to suffer the German people to endure economic hardship. The German Olaf Scholz, Prime Minister Ursula von Leyen, the Fourth Reich mistress, and the rest of these emasculated puppets have been following the dictates of their masters in the United States CIA and their Zionist Israeli masters within the CIA to force the Germans to commit suicide, economic suicide. And it's both simple and complex. The complex explanation is Germany has been mentally defunct and has been sort of a halfway lunatic society since World War II. They've been riddled with guilt and have had all sorts of pathologies sewn into them for 50 years. And they've abandoned conservative, godly principles. They've rushed into hedonism. They've rushed into environmentalism. They've rushed into the European Union socialism model. And they've also, quite simply, in rushing to these ideologies, they have, agreed to abide by whatever the U.S., tells them to do. And the U.S. is really controlling Germany. So the economy of a nation is like a garden. And the garden requires the sprinkler system, the water, to keep it moist and flourishing, the small businesses that grow there. When you shut off the water, in this case oil, natural gas, the garden cracks and everything dies. So the simple truth is the war on Ukraine that the Germans have issued, you know, according to the University of Mainz, they did a study. 96% of the German media was negatively reporting against Russia and Putin and glorifying Ukraine and Zelensky and the Nazis. Well, maybe that tells us something, too. The Germans glorifying the Nazis in Ukraine, along with the Nazis in America's Democrat Party. So they've been pushing this war agenda. They've never been honest with the people. They've never been promoting media that talks about negotiations. They've never talked about what happens to the economy when Germany makes the choice of shutting off the Russian oil that has been creating their economy to flourish in the first place for 50 years. So the German people have been denied this information by their media and their politicians because they followed the dictates of the American government, and they are committing suicide. And the German economy is going to implode in the next 6 months because they don't have oil to keep the shops open or run the factories. And you, quite frankly, could see starving and quite angry Germans rising up 10 times more than currently are to overthrow these puppets with a serrated edge, both physically and in the rhetoric that they'll begin using. So this is suicide that the Germans have self-inflicted at the instruction of the walking master of death, Joe Biden.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining us on the program. Professor Barkin joining us from Mexico City there, and Scott Bennett joining us out of San Francisco, California. That brings us to the conclusion of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Britain is bracing for nationwide industrial strikes. More and more workers are going to walk off their jobs, demanding higher wages amid a cost-of-living crisis. Railway workers are walking off their jobs, and they will maintain their strike until Tuesday. Network O'Rail warned of major disruptions, calling on people to travel only if necessary, as rail transportation services will be significantly reduced. Railway employees demand a pay rise proportionate to the country's soaring inflation. The railway strike comes amid widespread industry walkouts, including border force workers at airports, postal employees, and nurses and ambulance drivers, among others. The decades high inflation rate has led to a cost of living crisis, forcing Britons to dig deeper into their pockets. The Taliban's ban on women working for NGOs in Afghanistan draws strong condemnations from countries and international bodies. United Nations says the move would hit humanitarian operations just as winter grips the country already in economic crisis. The UN envoy for Afghanistan says his office would consult with NGOs and seek to meet with the Taliban authorities for an explanation. Meanwhile, EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell said European Union strongly condemns the decision. The Taliban ordered NGOs to stop their women employees from working because of, quote, serious complaints about the non-observance of the Islamic hijab by female workers. The decision comes less than a week after it banned women from attending universities. Our correspondent in Kabul, Abdullah Mirzadeh, says it will be harder for women to make ends meet from now on, especially in families with women as the head of the household or those who do not have male supporters.
Many say that after that the people are angry, that people are again upset with the new decree. Many say that there are many families that they have that they don't have any men to support them. So how are they going to earn money and find food for themselves? They only have women, there are widows, there are people who have lost their husbands, their fathers, their brothers. There are many families that do not have any male supporter. So how are they supposed to find food? How are they supposed to continue living? The only answer that the Taliban have given by now is that these new decrees are all given due to the woman non-observing the Islamic hijab. Several renowned NGOs in Afghanistan, like NRC, that have a background of 45 years of working in Afghanistan, have actually stopped their operations in Afghanistan, and maybe they do not work anymore. There is NRC, there is DRC, and other international organizations. There are individuals like Sheikh Ahmad Tayyib, who is the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar in Egypt. He has said that these actions by the Taliban are not accepted even by Islam.
China says it is resolutely opposed to a new U.S. law that boosts military assistance for Taiwan. Beijing says the law contains provisions that cause serious damage to peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. Taipei, however, has welcomed the legislation, which will provide it with $10 billion in security aid. Taiwan says the move shows the importance Washington attaches to ties with the island and its security. Taiwan has been a source of tensions between China and the U.S. for years now. That has because the U.S. continues to assist the island, which China considers its own territory. Beijing says Washington's assistance emboldens Taipei in its independence push. Some 250 million people in North America are feeling the icy grip of a massive winter storm that has been linked to at least 19 deaths ahead of the holiday weekend. The vast storm extends all the way from Texas to Quebec. Temperatures have dropped to -45 degrees Celsius in some areas. More than 1.5 million people have lost power and over 7,000 U.S. flights have been canceled. Low visibility has caused a number of fatalities in traffic accidents, including a 50-car pileup in Ohio that has killed 4 motorists. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
aperture.
Welcome back. We met Javad Qarai, an enthusiastic young nature explorer, and followed him as he discovered some of Iran's most unspoiled natural attractions in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. We visited the exotic Martian mountains with their peculiar shapes and ventured deep into the intertwining and spiral cave of the region. And finally, we joined Javad as he gazed into the mesmerizing waters of the Sea of Oman above the rocky cliffs. Stay with us as we further explore the wonders of the region and meet the kind-hearted locals.
The area is so beautiful and unspoiled. It is home to large flocks of birds, such as the cormorant sitting on the sandy beaches offering a scenic spectacle. It is the perfect place for bird watchers to come and feast their eyes on these exotic animals. Bird watching is a branch of tourism, or to be exact, ecotourism. Bird watchers are steadily growing in number. Cormorants are aquatic birds. They are medium to large in size, with a body weight in the range of 0.35 to 5 kilograms and a wingspan of 45 to 100 centimeters. The majority of the species have dark feathers. They are excellent divers, and underwater, they propel themselves with their feet with help from their wings. Some cormorant species have been found to dive as deep as 45 meters. Cormorants nest in colonies around the shore, on trees, islets, or cliffs. They are coastal rather than oceanic birds, and some have colonized inland waters. Indeed, the original ancestor of cormorants seems to have been a freshwater bird. In my previous trips here, I saw large flocks of these beautiful birds here in this season. But this time, there aren't so many of them. One of the reasons behind the decline in their populations is because some of the locals hunt and eat them. Although cormorants are not supposed to be eaten because they are carnivorous. According to some religious scholars, flesh-eating birds are not to be eaten. The flesh of carnivorous birds may contain many diseases that can be passed on to humans if eaten. But the locals are not aware of that. Those who hunt the cormorants do not do so because there is nothing else to eat, so they have no reason to kill and consume so many of these poor birds and do irreparable damage to the wildlife and environment in the region. The environment and wildlife are manifestations of God's beauty. How can humans, who consider themselves the greatest of creations, allow themselves to harm the manifestations of God's beauty? Human survival on the planet Earth inevitably depends on the environment and on the wildlife. Therefore, our country's officials should educate the local populations and make sure that the environment in each and every part of the country is well taken care of. This has been a very beautiful day for me. Berries is one of the most beautiful places I have visited, and I have visited many over the years. A day later, I'm on my way to a beautiful village in the heart of nature, accompanied by my good friend, Shir Muhammad Rahul. To get to Sham-e-Kohne, that's the name of the village, we have to walk a relatively long way surrounded by beautiful natural beauties. Near the village, we run into a shepherd named Shir Muhammad, sitting under an old leafless tree by a pond. His is the simplest of lifestyles. The Baluch mainly speak the Baluchi language, a branch of northwestern Iranian languages. Experts say the Baluch language is very similar to that of the Medes, a people of Indo-Iranian origin, who inhabited the western and northwestern portion of present-day Iran, And that is a testimony to the deep roots of the Baluch tribe in Iran. Today, the Baluch people live in the southwest of Iran, the south of Pakistan, Afghanistan, Oman, India, the UAE, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Zanzibar. Borders between countries haven't been able to separate members of this ancient Iranian tribe. Although they live in different countries, the Baluch have preserved their traditions. They pay each other visits, and intertribal marriages are common. The Shahnameh and several other old books have placed the dwelling place of the Baluch people at around the north of modern-day Khorasan province. For various reasons, this peace-loving, serene tribe have had to move here, the southeast of Iran, and lived in peace since. Shir Muhammad Baluch is one of the original members of the old Sham village. But today, the village is nothing more than a collection of abandoned buildings where he can rest during sizzling hot days. This is amazing. They place one lantern and both families lived under the light of that one lantern. There isn't much left of the old Sham village, but even the ruins of it speak of the very rich culture of the kind, hospitable Baluch people. One of the structures that has stood the test of time is the beautiful mosque of Old Sham, built by the very hands of those who inhabited the village many years ago. It's gotten unbearably hot by now. I am kilometers away from the coast of the Sea of Oman in Baluchistan. But that distance is not going to keep me from a much-needed dive on the golden sand beach. The difference between the temperatures in Iran's climate zones is incredible, and to many, unbelievable. I'm in the southeasternmost part of Iran, swimming in the Sea of Oman in the middle of winter. On this same day, some of my mountaineer friends climbing up Mount Damavand tell me the temperature where they are is around minus 30 degrees. That's a difference of 60 degrees between two areas of Iran. I've done my swimming, and now I've decided to travel to the southeastern end of Iranian territory. That's the Gwadar Bay, located in the Gulf of Oman on the maritime border of Iran and Pakistan. A lot of fish is caught and brought to shore here. Many large trawler launches unload their catches on smaller boats on the shore. Before they arrive in Iranian territory, the fish coming from those launches are purchased by middlemen and transported to big cities around the country. The main purpose of my trip to Guadar Bay is to see the beautiful Hara mangrove forest in this border area. Hara is a species of the Lantana genus. The seeds from the tree fall into the water, where wave action takes them to more stationary parts of the sea. The Hara seeds become fixed in the soil layers of the sea and grow. Hara trees are saltwater plants that are often submerged at high tide. They are salt-tolerant trees and are adapted to life in harsh coastal conditions. They contain a complex salt filtration system and a complex root system to cope with saltwater immersion and wave action. They are adapted to the low oxygen conditions of waterlogged mud. We are now exactly at the mouth of Khur-e Bahu. This is the zero point that separates Iran from Pakistan. We are about to enter a very beautiful river. As a matter of fact, it's a khur or firth, it's not a river. And it continues a long way in that direction. Khur-e Bahu is in fact a bay area created by water from the Sea of Oman. This is the last spot before you actually arrive in the sea itself. Before the firth, there is the Bahu Kalat River that flows from Sarbaz Mountains to the Gulf of Oman. This is it. I can see the mountains of Pakistan vividly from here. Pakistan is located right on the other side of the Hara Forest. A lot of birds and fish live here in this firth, which, as I said, was created by salty waters from the Sea of Oman. It's a very beautiful area. The Hara forests spanning this area are indeed unique. The Hara tree grows to heights of 6 meters and has bright green leaves and twigs. It is a species of the mangrove tree that can grow in coastal saline or brackish water. They have a complex salt filtration system and complex root system to cope with saltwater immersion and wave action. The Hara excludes salt by having significantly impermeable roots, which are highly impregnated with suberin, acting as an ultrafiltration mechanism to exclude sodium salts from the rest of the plant. Hara trees grow in 8 protected areas in Iran and are fortunately looked after by both the authorities and people. The Hara forests in the south of Iran are a major habitat for migratory birds in the cold season and for reptiles, fish, and varieties of bivalves. Green or hooked turtles and venomous aquatic snakes are also indigenous to the forests. Bird life includes herons, flamingos, pelicans, and angler eagles. Another important feature of these forests is the appropriate and suitable seabed conditions for the ovulation of fish in the Persian Gulf. The locals say you are very likely to run into a school of dolphins passing Guadar Bay on your way to see the Hara forests. But looks like I'm down on my luck today. There are still many villages in Baluchistan that have weathered the storm of time and preserved their traditional look. But the way to visit one of them is to seek guidance from a local guide. And that person is none other than my very own friend, Shir Muhammad. We have a long way ahead of us to the village we have decided to visit. To get there, we have to drive on a vast plain. There are no paved roads, not so much as a dirt track. The name of the village is Nilag. Baluchistan is a very dry province. It rains very little here. As a result, not very long ago, the people of Baluchistan would dig a catchment to accumulate what little rainwater that fell from the sky. Those catchments acted as their only water reservoirs. They called them hutags. The importance of drinking water is not lost on anyone nowadays. Aware of the shortage of this vital liquid, countries around the world have embarked on preserving and conserving drinking water in recent years. The best way to prevent water from going to waste in a country like Iran that's facing a severe water problem is changing the consumption pattern. Put it simply, every human being needs only 10 liters of water to wash their whole body. But most of us keep the water running while having a shower and let something between 100 and 200 liters of precious drinking water go into the septic tank. Nowadays, most of us think that to keep our yards clean, we have to wash them with tap water every week. While in the past, although the problem of water was not as serious in Iran as it is now, and the population was not as big, people would clean their yards with sprinkles of water and a broom. And the purpose was to prevent dust from rising when sweeping. In the past, there weren't as many cars that needed to be washed with drinking water every few days. But today, millions of liters of water is consumed every year to wash the millions of vehicles across the country. I came to realize the importance of drinking water in recent years. On one of my trips to this same Baluchistan region, I ended up bathing with only 3 liters of water after going without a wash for a whole week. It was a time when the people here were grappling with a drought. That incident led me to understand the importance of drinking water in Iran. I now understand why we shouldn't let even a single drop of it go to waste. This is one of the oldest houses in this whole area. In this whole village. And Haji Khodabakhsh was in fact born in this same house. He's giving me a tour of the interior. The houses in the village of Nilag are beautiful and traditional. But there is one house in this village that is very old, very beautiful, and unique. In Baluchi language, this house is called a kud. It is dark in the house. There is no electricity, no running water, and not even a room. This is all there is to it. The owner says that all the members of the family, and there were 9 of them, used to live together in this house that is no more than one big lounge. But despite all the deprivations, the members of the family are as close as ever. The Baluch are a very kind, family-loving people. I feel an eerie feeling of calm among these pure souls. Baluch hospitality makes any stranger visiting these parts feel at home in their houses. You feel like you were born and raised in one of these houses and lived a good, simple life growing up with these genial and warm people. Most of the Baluch people who don't go fishing at sea are herders, and in this area, camels are the best livestock to keep. Camels have adapted very well to the environment and climate of Baluchistan. My journey is coming to an end. Shir Muhammad tells me about one of his friends. Mr. Shah Bakhsh is one of the main camel herders in the region. The old camel rider tells me about Baluch kindness towards all of the world's creatures. Kindness embedded in the culture of this people. The Baluch are a very kind and passionate people, traits that are evident in the words of Mr. Shah Bakhsh. When I ask him if he has ever tried camel meat, he says the Baluch normally do not eat camel. That's because camels are loved by these people, and so they don't have the heart to slaughter them, much less eat their meat. I have arrived at the end of my trip, a trip that taught me many valuable lessons about the Baluch people and Baluchistan. This is a province with a beautiful, unspoiled environment, a place where the sea meets the mountains and plains. The Baluch people, with their rich ancient culture, are a source of great pride for Iran. I too am proud of these honest, kind people. Proud of having such generous fellow countrymen and women. The Sea of Oman looks like a drop of water against the unfathomable hearts of these people. All I want for the people here is proper, stable jobs compatible with their culture and environment, created by competent and caring government officials. I hope for facilities and development to come to this part of my country without doing any damage to its ancient culture and pristine environment.
Well, perhaps Iran's internationally renowned mosques and ancient remnants of Isfahan and Shiraz are what attracts most visitors from far and wide, but I'm sure many nature-loving individuals have become interested in visiting Iran's southernmost region and the pristine natural wonders of Sistan and Baluchistan. And that's it for this week, everyone. Thank you. Do join me again next time here on Aperture for another documentary. Goodbye for now.
IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life for IRIB English Radio. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkul. And one of my specialties is in the field of Islamic lifestyle. And whatever I say is from the viewpoint of the Quran and the tradition of the Prophet and his household. In this episode of the program, I take advantage of this given opportunity and initiate my speech with the title of The Remembrance of God and its positive role in our daily life. Inshallah, this title that has a close connection to Allah will be a source of blessing for my talk in this program. As a preface to my speech, I need to say that there is an undeniable fact about our life in this world. The life of this world is always accompanied by all sorts of hardships. I mean, all kinds of opacity and calamities. No matter how powerful humans are, no matter how intelligent or clever they are, they can only reduce the amount of the degree of these difficulties if they wish. And these existing problems and hardship will never be eradicated at all. We cannot erase them forever in our life. This is a fact. This is what Allah says in the Quran, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي كَبَدٍ. Indeed, we have created mankind in severe difficulties. Among these troubles, we can name the death of our beloved relatives. Since all people cannot die at the same time, it is impossible. Other difficulties are like the illness, natural disasters, all types of deficiencies in our wealth, in our property, and so on and so forth. The question here is this: can we let these problems overwhelm us? Should we allow this source of frustration to drain our energy, to reduce it, to leave us helpless and frustrated, or there is a solution? The solution can only be found to what I mentioned in the title of this program, which is the positive role of remembering Allah in our life. We should pay attention that one of the attributes of Allah is that He is Rabbul Alameen. The word Rab in Arabic terminology means an owner that supervises the affair of what he owns. Pay attention to this meaning. Allah is the owner of mankind and supervises them. And everything that is related to people are under the supervision of Allah. God Himself has decided to arrange the life of the world in such a way that it is accompanied by such problems and difficulties. As a result, Allah will never lose the control of what He Himself has arranged. On the other hand, the word Rab, which means, let me translate it in this way, a resourceful owner, an observant and caring owner and master, then it is requires that Allah be aware of people's condition. Add to it that Allah is all-powerful, totally mighty, also merciful and all-knowledgeable, very aware. When we pay attention to these attributes of Allah, we understand that we are in the presence of someone who can do everything. Nothing is beyond the scope of His capability. Then in difficulties, we are not alone. We are with someone who is attentive, who is with us. Everything and every causes are inferior to His might. Every problems are subordinate to His power. Here, let's have a break for a short minute and I will go back and continue my discussion.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. I am going to talk about the program for a better life. The topic of my today's discussion is to remember Allah and its role in having a better life. In every trouble, we need to realize another fact. In any difficulty, in any hazardous situation, the divine blessings that man enjoy are much more and much wider than the problems. Even a person who sustains one or more diseases in his body, for example, if he pays more attention, he will find that hundreds, or better to say thousands of parts or organs of his body are working properly. We are so immersed in God's blessing that we cannot even count them. This is what Allah says, وَإِن تَعُدُّوا نِعْمَةَ اللَّهِ لَا تُحْصُوهَا. If you decide to count the blessings of Allah, you cannot cope with that. Those blessings are more than what you are going to count. So it is very important that if we face a problem, if we get into trouble, we, instead of complaining, instead of remaining impatient or becoming scared and face confusion, we had better pay attention to the blessings we have. Pay attention that Allah sees us and is aware of our condition. By this way, we will never become ungrateful. This is very bad, that a servant of Allah becomes ungrateful to his master, to his owner. The problem will come to an end soon or later, or at least the problem would become more sustainable. No problem remains as instant as it was at the beginning. The degree of our hardship will reduce. But the fact is that we should trust Allah, remember Allah, that He is aware of our condition. He is mighty, He can solve our problem. And He is merciful, I mean, He is attentive to our difficulties, to the condition and predicament that we are stuck in. The real successful man, a real victorious man, is the one who knows that God is present, knows that Allah is aware, is conscious of his problems. And as the Quran says, لَهُ مَقَالِيدُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ, all the keys of solution in the skies and on the earth are with Allah. So remembering Allah helps us realize that we are not alone. It makes us think that we are encompassed with Allah's mercy much more. It makes us understand that even at the middle of difficulties, the blessings of Allah. So when man understands that Allah is there, it makes him think that he is encompassed with Allah's mercy much more than the harm that has befallen upon him. So the key element and the core point of my discussion is that in any difficulties, in order to enjoy a better life, we have to focus our mind on the presence of Allah. And inshallah, we will continue this discussion in our upcoming series if we have a fortune. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.